The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning, everyone. It's delightful to be with you today. My name is Soshin. I'm a Hoshi here at the Village Zendo. And it's funny, there was a picture that got sent around on the Facebook or the Yahoo group showing the Zendo, you know, empty with this beam of light coming in. And today it's like full and there's no light, you know, no, it's gray. And so not my last picture, but it's wonderful to see so many people here. I feel like the last few times I've come in for Zazen Kai, it's just been a very small, intimate group, so I'm really happy to be starting out this year of 2020 with all of you. As you may all know at this point, we have a study text, which is Zen Echoes, which is the kind of a dialogue between three Zen masters who are all were women. Over the centuries, actually. And I think this follows on the work that we have been doing recently to kind of update and take another look at our female Zen ancestor lineage. And for those of you who have chanted it, you'll have noticed that it grew. You know, there's a lot more women ancestors than we had really originally thought. And they had a profound influence on the course of Zen. They just haven't always been acknowledged or known about in our Western tradition. So we've, a number of people, Geshe over here especially, and several other people, Jorin, wherever you are, you know, worked really diligently and with a lot of great effort to call out these women and bring them to our attention. So now we're studying this book, but it's interesting because with this new lineage, one of the women whose names, well, who we chant, we actually don't have her name for, and that's Rice Cake Woman. And every time I chant that, I feel really touched because, in fact, we don't know people's names, whether they're women or men. So many people, monks, nuns, lay people, teachers, through hundreds and hundreds of years since Buddhism started, have been following this path. And we don't know who they are. We just know that thanks to them, we're here today. And even if somebody in this room is going to have their name chanted at some point, or will have written something and be published and their name will be recognized, the fact is, you know, all of us, you know, something is no longer known after we are no longer here. You know, the way we smell or the look in our eyes, you know, that's gone, even if someone is still chanting our name. So I thought, Rice Cake Woman isn't one of the koans or people that's talked about in this book, but there's another unnamed woman, and that woman is in the koan Zhaozu checks out the old woman. And so I want to talk about that koan today. So a monk who was a disciple of Zhaozu was traveling to Mount Wutai. He asked an old woman, "Which is the road that leads to Mount Wutai?" And the old woman responded, "Just go straight ahead." After the monk had left, the old woman said, "There you have another good monk who has gone on his way." Later, when a monk asked Zhaozu about this, Zhaozu said, "Wait till I have checked it out, her out." So it goes on, but I'm going to stop there for a minute. So, you know, we have to imagine that there were many people, tea houses, service people of one sort or another, who encountered monks going on their pilgrimage and visiting the different masters, many of whom, you know, lived up in the mountain, were named after the mountain, and had quite an arduous journey to get to them. For road signs or anything, or GPS, you know. And so this monk has an encounter with somebody. And apparently, when he gets to the top of the mountain and kind of shares his experience with other people, I'm guessing that other people have met this woman too. And they conclude, you know, there's this old woman at the bottom of the mountain, and she's just telling all the monks to go straight on their way, and then she makes a comment when they go when they do that. And so eventually, you know, the word gets around to Zhao Zhu that there's this, you know, people are wondering about this. Who is this person? And I'm reminded of another story where the monks are kind of agitated about something going on that also involves Zhao Zhu, and that's a story that you're probably or maybe familiar with, Nang Quan Kills a Cat. So in that story, again, the monks of the East Wing and the monks of the West Wing are arguing over a cat, and there's obviously a lot of energy up about this cat. We don't know why. And then Nang Quan says, well, you know, jumps right in, says, you know, if you can say a word, I won't kill the cat. And nobody says anything, and so in the story, he kills the cat. And later, he's telling about this situation to Zhao Zhu, who had been away and has just come back, and he says, you know, he tells a story, and Zhao Zhu puts his sandal on his head and walks out of the room. And Nang Quan says, too bad, if you'd been here, you could have saved the cat. So here also, Zhao Zhu is jumping right in. He doesn't kind of say, you know, they'll work it out. This is just minor, petty details of life. Or, you know, when they're mature as monks, they'll understand that these things, you know, are just not knowable. And I don't really know anything about this old woman. No, he says, I'm going to go check her out. So, the next day, Zhao Zhu went and asked the way, went and asked the woman the way to Mount Wutai. The old woman said, just go straight ahead. After Zhao Zhu had left, the old woman said, there goes another good monk who has gone on his way. When Zhao Zhu returned to the monastery, he said to the monk, I have checked out the old woman of Mount Wutai for you. So, what I came up for me right away with this was this question of, well, who was right? You know, did Mount, this woman, did she have a great insight and know how to respond to each of these lost people with a really appropriate, pithy statement? And then observe that, in fact, by following her directions, perhaps the monks were not really paying attention to what was right in front of them. You know, maybe that's her point. There they go, looking for something, trying to find enlightenment on the top of the mountain, seeking out another teacher, and yet the great reality is right here where we are right now. On the other hand, it's also possible that she was stuck. You know, she had this one thing that she knew how to say, and she wasn't able to really respond to each monk as a unique individual that came up to her. And so she said exactly the same thing to Zhao Zhu that she said to a novice. Well, maybe the same thing is appropriate for both of them, or maybe not. Maybe she wasn't able to herself really respond in the moment. It's also possible she was just crabby. know, she shouldn't have been working at a tea house. She should get another job because she didn't have very good customer service skills. I don't know. So here we have Zhao Su discovering something, but we don't know what it is. And I think it asks, the koan asks us to say, well, what do we think? What's really important here? Do we think that Zhao Su had a purpose to going down and checking the woman out if when he comes back to his monks, he isn't able to tell them anything more than I've checked it out? Or is the act of checking it out actually enough? We just need to check out what's going on in front of us. So let's see the verses that these three Zen masters wrote, because they're going to each take this up in a slightly different way. Master Miaozong says, crouching at the foot of the ancient road to Tai Mountain, traveling monks come and go, meeting with spears and shields. Zhao Su lifts up the arrows of the great hero, but once he has shot through the skeleton, he stops. So there's actually a footnote in here that explains that the skeleton basically refers to being free from thoughts or attachments to either samsara or nirvana. So again, it evokes this image of, you know, this great effort, which is, you know, spoken of in the sense of a battle. And the monks are there, coming and going with their spears and shields. They've got fabulous energy. They want to understand something. And Zhao Su, who has mastered it, lifts up the arrows of the great hero. But he shoots through a skeleton. And then he stops. And he doesn't tell us, of course, what he's seen through. And Master Miaozong doesn't offer an opinion either. And I think this is one of the key points. Why do we think we need to have an opinion on who Master Zhao Su was and who this woman was? Why do we, or at least I did, sort of default to who is right, who is wrong? Does she have it? Doesn't she have it? What's there to know here? You know, this discriminating mind saying, I've got to figure this out. And I think when Zhao Su comes back and says, I've checked her out, that's what he's holding up for us to see. Check it out. We don't need to then say, she's just an old woman who shouldn't be doing customer service. I checked it out. Master Bao Qi writes, many centuries later, when Zhao Zhu's eyeballs shoot forth a light, the old woman's brows are thrown to the ground. Although each appears to have sealed the border, in the end, neither one is able to get themselves out. Let's sit leisurely on top of the mountain peak and watch as one falls and the other rises. So Master Bao Qi is bringing out the same point, but in a different way. I think one of the things she's saying is that, in fact, one may have great insight, and maybe the other one didn't have great insight. It appears that the old woman's brows are thrown to the ground. That's often a way of expressing that, you know, she wasn't able to respond. But it could also be a way of expressing that she was just right there, stripped away. But we, can sit leisurely on the top of the mountain and watch. We don't need to jump in there and say, Zhao Zhu's better than the old woman. The old woman was enlightened by Zhao Zhu or wasn't enlightened by Zhao Zhu. They met, and we can watch. And that process of rising and falling is what we do in life. At any moment, each one of us will rise, will fall. We'll get it, we won't get it. We'll jump in and question. We'll step back and watch in a leisurely way. There's no fuss. Now, Master Zukui, she adds, go straight ahead. Distracted, he mistakes the road that was pointed out, traveling south, north, east, and west through the grasses. How many times can he go round and back in circles? What Zhao Zhu checked out, there are few who understand. Returning home in the spring breeze, singing and dancing alone. Tut, that wild fox. So what about that going straight versus going around in the grasses? You know, the grasses are often an image for, the words are escaping me. The grasses are often imaged just for this life, you know, for the stuff that comes up. So grasses are not oneness. There are many grasses. They're all over the place. They're weeds that we travel through. It's all the stuff of our life, our work, our relationships, the things that we struggle with, the things that we don't struggle with. And we're all traveling through those grasses. And, you know, I think many of us are sitting here because we hope that we can get out of those grasses and get to the top of the mountain where we have a view and where we're clear and free. We don't understand what it means to go straight. Is going around in the circle through the grasses necessarily mean that you're not also climbing the mountain? And if you're going straight ahead, are you missing something precious that's about your life, that is your life itself? And then when we check this out, what do we understand? But turning home in the spring breeze, singing and dancing alone, in the end, that's what we're going to do, whether we understand or whether we don't understand. It's the path of practice gives us that ability and that joy, I think, to sing and dance as we come back after checking it out. So she adds, pointing it out, all becomes clear, nothing to be done. In great peace, grasses and trees exhaust the weapons of war. The general with a single arrow penetrates the three barriers. The sun and moon, both round, beat out a joyful melody. And so here I want to point out what I think for me sometimes feels like a contradiction to what I've just been saying, because one of the things I think she's saying is that when we understand this on a very deep level and we check out our life fully and embrace it and engage it, we don't stay on the mountain, we come down, we look at things, we engage with them, then these wonderful things happen. Then we return home in the spring breeze. Then there's nothing to be done. Then we can lay down our weapons of war. And I think that that way of framing it can make it difficult sometimes, because it continues to reinforce this idea that we have something to gain, right? If we do all these things and awaken our mind, then we'll be free. Then we can lay down our weapons of war. Then we'll be able to sing and dance in the breeze. But in fact, I think what she's trying to get at here is that the actual practice itself of checking out is the point where it all becomes clear. So it's not that you check it out and then you get your awakening and then you get to laugh in the breeze and then you get to have lay down your weapons, you know. It's actual practice of going down, checking out, engaging what's in front of you. That is it. And the sun and the moon both beat out a joyful melody. Except, of course, we know that joy doesn't necessarily mean happy, because we know that that process of engaging can sometimes feel hard or sad or angry or troubled. So I will just end with my own verse. Too late to save a cat, the rest of his life in atonement. Thousands of monks, hundreds of decades, miles down the mountain, sandal on his head, just going straight ahead. Check it out.